what does it actually look like to move on? And I always think of like if you're at a beach and you're literally drawing a line in the sand and you're moving on. So it's like what came before that line in the sand is not, I hate to say forgotten, but it's just like forget about it, tuck it away, and move on, right? And so what I prefer to say instead or encourage people to think of is moving forward. Because if you imagine a big giant tapestry, so from the time you're born, all these threads kind of get woven into your tapestry. And whether that's friendships, whether that's family relationships, whether that's losses, whether that's education, whatever it might be, it's all woven into the tapestry of your life, right? And so this idea of moving on from some seismic event, this person that's kind of cut out of your life by virtue of their death, right? You can't cut them out of your tapestry because they've been woven into it over the course of your entire life. Well, maybe not in your entire life, depending on who you lose. Like certainly a parent, yes. A spouse, you don't know. I didn't know him from birth, for example. Most people probably haven't. But it's moving forward with rather than moving on from.
Welcome to Financially Ever After Widowhood, the podcast where we empower women to take control of their financial future after the loss of a spouse. I'm your host, Stacey Francis, president and CEO of Francis Financial, an award-winning and nationally recognized financial advisory firm. With the help of incredible guests, I'm ready to guide you through this challenging transition.
Our special guest today is Nikki Sewell, who is a therapist practicing over 17 years. She offers online therapy to adults that are dealing with grief after life seismic events throw them off course. And she is no stranger to grief and loss herself. She lost not only her husband, but also her father, both by the time that she was 30. These losses have shaped who she is today, how she sees the world, and how she works with her clients, helping them, as she says, not move on, but move forward. She talks about setting healthy boundaries, which is easier said than done, especially for women. She also shares at the end how important self-compassion is, because grief shows up in so many different ways. And make sure you stay to the very end, where Nikki talks about one of the most controversial things that you may face: your decision to repartner or not repartner. Confronting these societal pressures for some can be very difficult, and she gives words of advice to help you move through your decision going forward in your life with health and happiness and a way to ride the waves of opinions, whether they might be positive or in some cases negative and not agree with what they're doing. So without further ado, please help me welcome our unbelievable guest today, who brings not only her personal experience, but her decades of experience in helping others navigate grief. Nikki, it's so nice to have you here today and talking about a tough subject, grief, but I know that it's something that's really, you know, personal to you. How did you find yourself really getting into the field and doing the work that you're doing now?
Well, thanks for having me first. Second, to answer the question, I had started my social work degree in 2005 and was set to graduate, which I did, in 2007. And related to eventually kind of really focusing on the work of grief, in between my first year and my second year of my graduate program, my father had died. So in 2006, he had died. And then about a year later, when I graduated, I had gotten a job out in Connecticut. I was originally from Michigan, gotten a job out in Connecticut, moved out there. And then several years later, after getting married and doing all the things, my husband died. And so a few years after that, I was really leaning into, clearly the universe was trying to send me some kind of message, right? Two seismic life events, two seismic losses, both by the time I was 30. And so it wasn't right away after my husband died, but it was over the ensuing years that I really started kind of leaning into that work and starting to kind of market myself in terms of, rather than being a therapist who treats everything, anyone and everyone, right? Really saying, this is what I do. Yeah. You know, I accompany people through experiences of loss. And the majority of my clients have been widows, right? Or people who have lost a loved one to suicide, or orphaned adults, which I think, you know, that loss in particular is kind of almost a disenfranchised loss, because we expect, well, everybody loses a parent at some point. So it can't be that big of a deal, right? Of course, it's a massive deal, but it doesn't get enough attention, right? And it doesn't get enough support. So those are kind of the three areas that I work in within the context of grief counseling, grief therapy, grief work, whatever you want to call it.
So we just went through a whole lot. And I just want to go back to what you said. By age 30, you had lived through the death of your father, and then not too far after, the death of your husband. Like, these are not things. And you're right. We as daughters expect, of course, our parents are going to pass away at one point. But to have that happen, and then something that you would just never, ever expect, your husband to pass away. How do you pick yourself up from that? And you're a therapist, right? But yeah. I can't imagine that you're not insulated from having these feelings, right? What? That we all have.
Yeah. I mean, I was a therapist in training when I lost my father. And then I was a therapist, you know, already when I lost my husband. And certainly, you know, just because we have any, and this could apply to anyone who has any therapist or mental health provider who has any kind of loss in their lives, right? Like, yeah, or any big event in their lives. Certainly, we're humans too. And just because we have this expertise in mental health and healing and therapy and all those things, it doesn't mean that, yeah, we're immune from the experience of grief, right? So it certainly wasn't an easy journey. But I think that, you know, one of the things that I had to do for myself, and also one of the things that I suggest to my clients to do is, like, just literally sometimes we have to take it one day at a time, right? And sometimes that's too much. And so we have to take it, you know, 1 minute at a time. And sometimes that's even too much. So it's literally focusing on one foot in front of the other, right? Literally step by step by step, right?
Yeah.
Just at the beginning, I think it just depends on the day. Some days are better than others.
And I think that sharing that, you know, some days are just better than others, and just realizing that you take every step through each day, and just know that over time, things get better.
Easier.
Yeah. I was struggling with the word, like, yep. Easier, not that you forget. How do you help people post-trauma? Because obviously it's a trauma. And my father just recently passed away about 3.5 weeks ago. He passed away because of a sudden heart attack. I was not there, was informed of it during the process of when it was happening. And then, of course, when he passed away. But even though I didn't see him actually going through that heart attack, I have a certain amount of trauma. My stepmother, who was there, who witnessed everything and watched the EMS workers working on him, has very significant trauma. And for a lot of us, when we lose someone, there are memories of that experience of loss, whether it's their actual death or it's their funeral or it's something else. It's almost like they're branded on our brain. I almost think of that like branding that you would see on a cow or a horse, that is usually something that's one of the most traumatic things. That's what often stays there front and center. How do you help people move through that?
I will say different people move through the experience of trauma in different ways. Some mm-hmm. more quickly and others more slowly. And that's typically dependent on their own previous life experiences or their own previous relationship with other traumatic events that might have happened over the course of their lives. And also their support network and how their support network has kind of helped them through those experiences, right? But I think the first thing is labeling it what it is. It's a trauma. And even when you kind of separate yourself out from your stepmother, like that you're saying, I experienced a trauma. Okay, it wasn't the same trauma in the sense that I wasn't literally in the room with him, right? But nonetheless, it's a trauma. So we can learn about significant things that happen to our loved ones, and that can kind of get encoded into our brain as a trauma, or we can actually literally visually witness that thing happen or be on the phone with someone as something traumatic is happening. And either way, it's a trauma, right? And so that's always that first step is like calling it what it is. Because I think that in the therapy field, we talk about big T trauma and little T trauma, right? And so maybe we differentiate, you know, a big T trauma is like a, you know, a serious physical assault or a serious sexual assault. Whereas maybe a little T trauma is, you know, some teenager came running up behind you and stole the purse hanging off your shoulder, right? There's some violation in that because some object of yours, some belonging of yours was taken from you. But maybe it's not as significant as these two other examples of trauma. Now, it is not my job to tell people if they're experiencing a little T trauma or a big T trauma, because whatever, you know, however they define it, right?
Yeah.
You know, some people might have different kind of definitions of what that means.
So, Nikki, with like big T and little T, I agree with you that I feel like it's the person experiencing it that has that definition. The challenge that I think some people have, though, is that the outside world may not recognize if it's a little T or a big T and how that person's going through it. And I've talked to many women who have lost a parent, and I can't believe that this even happens with losing a spouse and a loved one, where they feel like their community around them doesn't understand that they're still coping with that loss. And I don't know if it's because of the age of social media where we move on, or the age of CNN and how quickly news is infiltrating our lives and then you're just moving on. But I've talked to many people who are almost afraid or concerned about bringing up the loss of their spouse or their parent, because they feel like themselves, like, I should be moving on. And partially because I feel like our society tells us, you should be moving on.
Yeah.
How do we reconcile that? How do we give ourselves permission to feel the grief, feel the anger, feel the hurt, feel the, you know, the fear and all of that, but allow ourselves the time we need? Because I think that also every person is different. And whether they have a big T or a small T, even among those, it's just very different.
Everybody's different. Everybody's relationship with the person that they lost, whether that be, you know, the spouse, the parent, the sibling, the friend, the whoever, right, is going to be different as well. And so that's going to kind of manifest in a different experience of grief. When you used the term earlier about people feeling an expectation of almost as if what's wrong with me, I know I need to move on, but I'm having a hard time moving on. Personally, like, and I'll say that all my clients know this, like, I very strongly dislike the idea of moving on or the expectation of moving on. And I think that's what it is. It's more kind of coming from the outside, this expectation that you move on. And when we think of the metaphor or the analogy of like, what is it visually? I'm a visual person, right? So what does it actually look like to move on? And I always think of like, if you're at a beach and you're literally drawing a line in the sand and you're moving on. So it's like what came before that line in the sand is not, I hate to say forgotten, but it's just like, forget about it, tuck it away and move on, right? And so what I prefer to say instead or encourage people to think of is moving forward. Because if you imagine a big giant tapestry, so from the time you're born, all these threads kind of get woven into your tapestry. And whether that's friendships, whether that's family relationships, whether that's losses, whether that's education, whatever it might be, it's all woven into the tapestry of your life, right? And so this idea of moving on from some seismic event, this person that's kind of cut out of your life by virtue of their death, right? You can't cut them out of your tapestry because they've been woven into it over the course of your entire life. Well, maybe not in your entire life, depending on who you lose. Like certainly a parent, yes. A spouse, you don't know. I didn't know him from birth, for example. Most people probably haven't. But it's moving forward with rather than moving on from. And maybe people listening might feel like that's like splitting hairs. And when I say, you know, when I use the word with versus from, like moving forward with versus moving on from, I think it's the idea that when I say grief never ends, it's not to say that you look or feel the same way, you know, the day after, for example, your father died, that you'll be in the exact same place 5 years down the road. You'll be in a very different place 5 years down the road, right? And anybody who loses anybody, again, you know, friend, spouse, partner, you know, parent, sibling, whoever, it changes and it morphs over time. But that loss is always part of you. That seismic life event, seismic loss, traumatic experience will always be with us. And so if we have an expectation that we need to move on or that we're supposed to move on, we're inevitably going to kind of set ourselves up for failure, because I don't know that it's something we move on from, but it's something that we just kind of lean into over time, embrace over time, because what other choice do we have?
The words that you use, not moving on, but moving forward. Part of moving forward is getting back into life. But
yeah.
One of the challenges, especially someone who's sustained just a unbelievable loss of a spouse, you need to, you know, really do so at your right pace. And so learning how to set boundaries, and I feel like setting healthy boundaries of what you're going to do and what you're going to not do, what you're going to say yes to and what you're going to say no to, it's a lot easier for us to talk about than actually in reality. I'd love to hear from you, your experience of how did you do that? But then also the many clients that you work with, how do you help them set boundaries?
In some ways, it's the practice makes perfect, right?
So I love that. That's true, right?
Right. It's like, you know, we all learn to ride a bike, right? At some point. And as we're learning to ride a bike, we're probably going to fall a few times and get a couple scrapes, a couple bumps and a couple bruises, right? And so going back to the expectations we were talking about a little bit ago, like if you set yourself up for, I need to set this boundary and I'm just going to do it and that's all there is to it and it's going to be easy, et cetera. Well, it's probably not, especially I think for, you know, not to make this a gendered conversation, but especially for women, I think, who, you know, we've been kind of socialized to take care of people, to be people pleasers, to be nice, to not be rude. And sometimes that gets internalized as don't set those boundaries for yourself because you might be perceived as too assertive. And we know that if we're too assertive, we're the B word, right? For example. So it's that process of practicing what feels right in terms of, okay, what can I say no to? What should I say no to? What do I feel like I really need to be able to do? So if there's something I have to do, does something else have to fall by the wayside? If we think also that using yet another analogy of watering from a well, and if the well is empty, and if that well is our figurative reserves, right? How can we water anything when we don't have any reserves left?
That's right? Such a good visual too, Nikki. I mean, I think every woman who is listening to this show at some point in her life, maybe even right now, her well is either, you know, very close to going dry or completely dry. And how can you water that garden? How can you help others? How can you help yourself? I feel like it's such an interesting journey for men and women, but I will also particularly say women because we tend to be such helpers and such caretakers. I know for me personally, I'm always continuing to learn how to keep my well full and how to continue to advocate for myself when I start to see that it's running empty. And I know for me right now, I would say my well is like 75% empty. And I noticed very clearly that that's starting to happen because I was stressed out this weekend. I am starting to get a cold and get sick. And my...
It could be related to both the grief and the stress, right?
Right. I mean, it's all those things. Because our mind tells us, and if we're not listening to our mind that our well is getting empty, bless our bodies. Our bodies then tell us, and they usually don't tell us in a nice, kind-hearted way. It's like I'm hitting you over the head and now you're sick, or now you've pulled your back, or you've herniated a disc, or you're having... It's amazing how it shows up in our body. So listening to where we are is really important.
And, you know, related to that, if we think about, oh, I have to do X, Y, or Z for someone else, right? But I feel like I'm overextended. I feel like I don't have anything left to give, right? If we push ourselves, not only are we potentially going to make ourselves sick or hurt ourselves in some way, even if that's not our intention, but we're so focused on being in service of someone else's needs and so afraid of what they're going to think of us if we're not able to do for or provide for them, that we in turn start to feel this sense of kind of obligation, which leads to resentment for the overextending ourselves. When if we just said to ourselves, checked in with ourselves, and when you described having this level of self-awareness that your mind is telling you it's time to slow down, and sometimes you have a hard time listening to that. And so then your body is like the backup, which the body will, like you said, smack you upside the head and tell you, no, I really mean it. It's really time to slow down.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. And the other piece too is just giving ourselves grace that like we're not going to be at our best. I mean, I will tell you, Nikki, a friend of mine said to me, she goes, you know, have grace with yourself because grief can show up in a lot of different ways in your life and it can really change the way you think about something. And I will tell you, I had one of, and again, this is judging myself, but I gave myself grief. Someone asked me, and she knew my father had died, and I just shared that and kind of going through the chaos of that. then sends me an email and asks me to promote an event that she is putting on to my network. And I know she did it, and she was just sending it out to probably 30 people because she needed help. But when I got that email, Nikki, I was like, are you kidding me? And I started to write an email back saying, you know, I would love to be able to help, but I'm, you know, dealing with the death of my father. I'm trying to rehome his two dogs that are set to go to the pound. I'm trying to afford to pay for my stepmom's rent for the rest of her life. And so I typed it all out, and then I had to delete it because I was like, Stace, she has no clue. She has no clue that this is what our family is facing right now. And I just wrote, you know, I have a lot of things on my plate. The event is in 2 days. I'm so sorry. Next time, if you can just let me know, maybe a week or two in advance, I would be more than happy to help you. And I sent it off and I felt good, but it took me some moments to kind of get through that and not judge myself that that was my initial reaction. And that's with a parent's passing. I think that when you have a spouse, it can be multiplied much more significantly of how you might respond to something, again, that someone just very kindly offers and, or, you know, asks you for something small and you're like, what the hell? You know? And I think for us, just like learning to have, like, not judge ourselves, that however we react initially, it is what it is. What are your thoughts? And do you give anyone like any tips or suggestions?
So here's what I will say, that a conversation that I often have with clients, right, when they're feeling, maybe they're describing something similar to what you just did, right? Which I think is perfect. You write it all out. Sometimes writing can be very cathartic. You write it all out, then you delete it. And then you just say, here's this one sentence response. I'm so sorry I'm not able to support right now. I have too much on my plate. Between, you know, the death of my father, the rehoming his dogs, and finding ways to take care of my stepmom. But I think of, or I refer to self-compassion, right? This idea that, and I'm boiling it down very simply, it's much more complex, but in simple terms, self-compassion, right? So what if it wasn't you, it was your best friend? Your best friend said to you, oh my God, Stacey, can you believe this woman just emailed me? She's wanting me to do this. And I have all this other stuff on my plate, right? You know, I'm dealing with this grief. I'm dealing with all these other things related to that. The layers of loss, as I called them. You know, can you believe, like, and now she wants me to do this and I feel this obligation, whatever, whatever. Your best friend would say to you, sometimes it's okay to say no. But
yeah,
and again, you know, especially women, but in general, I will say that, like, we have a much harder time giving ourselves permission to say no. We're much more likely to be critical of ourselves and say, get over yourself. It's one small thing. You can do it, right? Whereas if the friend came to us and said that our dilemma was instead of their dilemma, right? If the roles were reversed, we would have behaved in a very different way.
We would have a very...
give them that permission to say no, or to say, I can't overextend myself more than I already am.
Yeah. Maybe even have a friend that you just check in with, like, to say, hey, am I thinking straight? What are your thoughts? Just kind of like bouncing ideas off of,
even,
you know,
in that moment when you started kind of typing that email response, and then, like you said, you deleted it and then, you know, sent something different. Even in that moment, even if you don't have anybody that you can check in with in that moment, what would one of my best friends say?
Yeah.
Or if the roles were reversed, and my best friend was telling me this was their situation, what would I say to them? Okay. And the immediate response, not that, like, it's intuitive. It's not something you need to think about. And you would say, it's okay to say no. And okay, that's it. That's it. It's okay to say no. I've given myself permission to say no. I'm saying no.
Yeah.
And however, it conveyed that message back.
Nikki, that's such good advice of what would you tell your best friend? Because...
Or what would they tell you?
What they would tell you. So I know we're coming up to time, but we've never talked about this on the podcast, and I really would love to talk a little bit about repartnering and finding a partner. I feel like there are a lot of societal pressures and expectations, either if you repartner too quickly in people's view. And when I say people, it's like, you know, they're drowned, or he passed away X long ago, or your partner passed away X long ago. Like, why have you not started dating? I feel like it's almost like you can't win, right, with what people think and their expectations. So how do you advise your clients, and even for you, of how do you help them to focus on their personal growth and happiness and not jumping back into the dating pool, or someone that has met someone sooner than maybe they even thought and are, you know, exploring and starting that journey.
The bottom line is that no matter which direction we go in, whether someone chooses to repartner and when, whether someone chooses not to repartner, whether for a few years or ever, right? There's always somebody in your circle that's going to somehow be upset about it. There's always someone that's going to think that you're dating too soon, or that you're not getting out there soon enough, or that you're turning into a spinster because it's been so many years after, you know, your person mm-hmm. died. So to start, it's just assuming that you're not going to be able to make everybody happy, that somebody's yeah. going to have some opinion mm-hmm. about how you're living your life, how you're choosing to live your life post-loss, and that's just all there is to it. So rather than setting us up to be surprised that I can't believe Aunt Maud said X, Y, or Z, or Aunt Maud, you know, accused me of, you know, getting out there too soon, or that Uncle Joe said, gosh, it's time to get out there because it's been X number of months or years, right? There's always going to be somebody that's going to say something like that. And if before we get to the dating part, there's also, if you're married and if you're wearing a very important ring on a very important finger, there's also somebody that's going to make some remark about that, whether you leave it on too long, whatever that means, yep. or whether you take it off too soon, right? And so I think what it comes back to, and this is not always easy, but again, it's giving yourself permission to do what you feel like is right for you. Whether that's, you know, so I've worked with widows who have successfully repartnered and are actively in relationships or marriages, subsequent marriages, right? I've, you know, worked with widows who are on the other end of the spectrum who are like, you know, it's been so many, you know, whether it's 2 years, whether it's 5 years, whether it's more, I'm just not interested. I'm just not there. I just don't want that. Or maybe they still don't want that because it's not with him. And that's not because they're idealizing their spouse, but it's because like they recognize that it's a lot of work. Starting a new relationship is a lot of work, especially yeah. today in the context of how most people are meeting people through this kind of app culture, right? And then there's another group. So there's these three different groups. So the one on the one end that's like successfully repartnered, the other group who's saying no thanks, and then yet the other group who's kind of in the middle, who are kind of out there actively dating. And I think that ultimately, again, it's just, what are you ready for? What do you want? What can you do to kind of shut the committee down in your head? And the committee is all the people that have said all the things to you about where you should or shouldn't be, what you should or shouldn't be doing. Because really, it doesn't matter. You're not hurting anybody. You're not hurting yourself. It's one thing to say your husband died a month ago and you're out there dating. Okay, then yeah, that's probably too soon. Because what are you running from, right? What are you escaping?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
What are you
yeah.
avoiding? What are you not dealing with, right? But if it's been, you know, different strokes for different folks. It's been a year. It's been a year and 5 months. It's been 2 years. It's been whenever. Like, if it feels right for you to put yourself back out there, put yourself back out there in whatever way that feels comfortable.
And I have to say something. I want to just emphasize that, wow, it's really powerful. Before you even make that decision of what you want for yourself, just realizing that people are going to have different opinions and you're going to tick off someone. Someone's yeah. not gonna agree. And I will tell you something that with losing my dad, just because I've worked with so many people who experience grief through Francis Financial that have lost their spouse, the number of, you know, excuse my language, asinine things that my clients have shared that people have told them, Nikki, I went into this process knowing that there were going to be some things that people said or did that were just like, are you kidding me? Like, really, are you kidding me? And so when that happened for me, Nikki, I was like, oh, okay, there it is. There it is.
And that's the perfect illustration of my point when I say that to people, because then that way you're like, okay, I was expecting that. I didn't
yep, there it
know
is.
How it was going to be presented, but there it is. That's what it looks
yeah,
like.
Yeah, and like, I didn't like, realize maybe I didn't really think it was going to be that person, but okay, that's the person, you know, and it's interesting because it takes so much power out of that over ourselves, yeah. right? And you're expecting it. Maybe not from that person or at that time, but like you're kind of ready, in, I guess, in some ways.
Maybe not even expecting it, but being ready for it
yeah.
and being open to it. That there's someone somewhere at some point that's going to make some kind of asinine remark, right? And that's just all there is to it. You don't always know who the person is going to be, but just be prepared for it so that when it does happen, it doesn't kind of bowl you over, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I do feel like it's a good learning opportunity for all of us too of going through this journey of like, for me, like I think back of how did I react? What are the things I said to someone who has lost a partner or lost a family member or lost a dear friend? You know, I feel like it's a really good learning opportunity for ourselves to just be much more accepting in general of, you know what, grief shows up for different people different ways and people say different things to grieving people many times they don't realize what they're saying, and they're just uncomfortable. They're uncomfortable around the topic. They're just uncomfortable and, quite frankly, trying to do the best they can too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Nikki, this has been unbelievable. How do our listeners find out more about you? Can you share your website, maybe share also the types of clients that you work with and which state that you can work in as well as a therapist?
So you could easily find me at my website, nikkisewell.com. Hard to forget, right? So nikkisewell.com. That's my website. So I work with, you know, adults. I don't work with children. I don't work with adolescents. I work with adults. And primarily I do a lot of grief work. But what I like to do in the context of grief work is thinking about this kind of bridge from grief to growth, right? This terrible event happens, this seismic life event happens. Okay, what do we do with it? How do we move forward with it, right? Rather than being kind of stuck in this place of this thing happened and I want to kind of stay here, right? Thinking about the work of grief is kind of a forward moving kind of process. So having said that, so I work with clients and I'm located in the state of Michigan, but virtually I can see clients in the states of Connecticut, which is where I lived for many years before moving back to Michigan last year. So Connecticut, Michigan, Ohio, Indiana, South Carolina, and Florida. Those things might change, right? At some point, I might give up a license, let go of the license, get another license, right, in a different state. But that's as it stands. And my practice is obviously virtual.
Unbelievable. And for all of you listening, we will make sure that we put Nikki's contact information in the show notes, as well as all the states that she can work in. And I know that you offer online therapy, which is amazing. And you know, for a lot of therapists, they can only work in one state. So the fact that you're able to work with individuals in Michigan, Connecticut, Indiana, South Carolina, Florida, Ohio, very powerful, very powerful. And I just want to say a great big thank you for being here, Nikki, not only for sharing your advice for your clients and thoughtful help for all of our listeners, but also sharing your own personal story and your journey.
Absolutely. Again, thanks for having me. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us today. Nikki went through so many important pieces, everything from learning how to move forward and not move on, navigating your boundaries and setting those boundaries to make sure that you're able to heal and move forward in a healthy way. She also talked very importantly about self-compassion and helping you with the journey to repartner or not repartner. For many women, there are so many questions about how you move forward, particularly around their finances. Women come to us to help them rebuild their financial life. And if you have any questions in particular about your situation, whether it's questions about Social Security, questions about pension, planning for retirement and beyond, being able to create an income stream from your portfolio, these are all areas that we can help with and more. Please reach out to me at Stacy, S-T-A-C-Y, at francisfinancial.com, or you can go to our website at www.francisfinancial.com. Know that you are not alone. We are here for you, and we are here to help you through this journey of rebuilding your financial life to achieve the financial security that we all deserve. Thank you again for joining us at Financially Ever After, and we'll see you in 2 short weeks.
Thank you for tuning in to Financially Ever After Widowhood. If there's a question you'd love for us to answer on the podcast, we can do that for you. All you have to do is give us a call, and the number is 347-682-5580. Let me say that again. 347-682-5580. Whether you're working with an advisor or you're maybe doing it on your own, we invite you to reach out to us at www.francisfinancial.com, or you can email me at Stacy, S-T-A-C-Y, at francisfinancial.com. Our hope is to be a resource for you to help you also find a great financial advisor, whether that be with our firm or one of our trusted colleagues. Please be sure to like, rate, and subscribe to the podcast, and join us next time on Financially Ever After Widowhood.